Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio, the DeKalb Chamber Edition. Stone, how you doing?
I am doing well. I'm well fed. I'm getting jazzed about tonight. Opening ceremonies tonight, right?
That's right.
Is it really going to be tonight, or are they going to have to do it at 2 o'clock in the morning, or how does that work?
It's how many hours back. I don't know how this works.
Maybe somebody here will give us a little insight, but that's going to be fun. You know, my wife is a real big fan of the Olympics. She was at the 96 Olympics. Did you get to see any of that?
Yes, I did.
When I was in town?
That was a lot of fun.
And what is your Olympic event? What do you do?
What do I do?
Synchronized swimming?
Yes, I watch a lot of television. That's my event. Well, you played baseball. You could be in the baseball.
Well, I could maybe juggle because that's what
juggling.
I did.
And ping pong.
You sat the bench and juggled.
And ping pong.
I can beat anyone in the state of Alabama.
And ping pong.
All seven of us who played, I was at the top of the heap.
You were state champ.
That's right.
So this is a DeKalb Chamber of Commerce special. We have Leonardo McClarty here. Welcome, Leonardo.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back and to join you guys. Enjoyed it the first time and glad to be back again.
I got to ask, though, the coin on the lapel, tell us about that.
Well, this coin on the lapel is actually one penny. And this is a penny symbolizing the upcoming transportation referendum vote that's on July 31st that I'm sure many of you and many of our listeners are getting direct mail pieces on and seeing the signs at the intersections and the billboards all about Anti-Atlanta.
Now, so I've seen the polling's been a little tight, maybe a little tighter than everybody anticipated.
Well, I think from those that I've spoken to running the campaign and on the doing the polling, we pretty much expected it was going to be a tight race, and I think we're certainly are getting what we bargained for.
So you're optimistic?
Well, definitely remain optimistic, and I think we'll. It's certainly going to be a fight to the finish, mm-hmm. but it's one in which everyone has been preparing for a long time, and really there's a lot at stake.
Now, I know this show wasn't supposed to be about this, but since we brought it up, do you mind kind of talking a little bit about the July 31st regional transportation referendum, and T-SPLOST is what everybody's calling it, and it's a one-cent tax. And is it the entire state that's affected by this?
Well, the entire state is actually going to vote.
To vote.
And the state is divided up into 12 regions.
Right.
And so there's the Atlanta region that's comprised of 10 counties.
Uh-huh.
And so within these 10 counties, there are 157 projects that are on that list that are comprised of everything from your major roads and interchanges to some transit and the like. And so, again, there were projects selected by 21 of our elected officials in the 10-county region here, specifically for the Atlanta area.
But this vote it's a statewide vote, so it has to be 50% plus one?
It's statewide, but it's for each region. And so, for instance, if you're in Savannah, you're in a region to your
right.
own in which you'll be voting on projects specific to the Savannah area. And then if you're in, say, Columbus, or if you're in North Georgia, Augusta, you're voting on projects specific to your region.
But it's all or nothing, though, right?
It is. And so each region definitely it's a 50% plus one.
But Savannah can't win. They can't pass it, and Atlanta doesn't pass it. And Savannah's stuff happens, and ours doesn't.
Actually,
right?
That can happen.
Oh, that can
yes,
happen.
That's,
oh,
that's,
really?
That's, yeah, that's
oh,
why
wow.
it's specific to the region, and so, and that's why the focus specifically here has been with the DeKalb Chamber and many of the other chambers and trade groups that are based here.
Well, I'll tell you, the Metro Chamber, they're a little bit behind this thing, too, because, mm-hmm. Lee, as you know, I went and did my grand keynote address yesterday. They
right.
let me talk for about 6 or 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they got the signs are everywhere, and they made a big deal about talking about this. So, yeah, the Metro, your brothers at Metro, are they're behind you, too, right?
Definitely. You know, you could certainly call them your big brother that if you need them, you can call on them.
Right. It seems like all the chambers are really trying hard to get the vote out and to get everybody on board on this.
We are. And for us, it's, you know, it's about a number of things. One, job creation, competitiveness as it relates to how the Atlanta region stacks up compared to whether it's a Charlotte or Dallas or other parts in the country and different things that they're doing to push the needle and to really advance things from an infrastructure investment
right.
standpoint. And so we're looking at it from a job creation, both from a retention perspective as well as new jobs. Also, even on the jobs that could come about as you go about doing construction,
right?
Not even so much the jobs that would come afterwards. And so, again, it's about competitiveness, job creation, workforce development, the whole nine.
Right. And I think one of the things that I'd like to see is, if it passes, hopefully it will, is that the deepening of the Savannah port. I think that's an important component for Georgia as a state.
Yeah, that's definitely important. And matter of fact, since you just mentioned that, I'll just throw in, we actually have Curtis Foltz, who is the executive director of the Georgia Ports Authority, coming mm-hmm. to speak at an upcoming chamber luncheon on the 6th of August. And so I think, you know, we recognize, as well as other organizations in the metro Atlanta area, that the ports, you know, really do have a statewide economic impact.
Right. It's one of those things that it's not on our radar because it seems so far away, but it's something that impacts the area dramatically.
And especially if you function in the logistics industry as well, mm-hmm. being able to get goods, whether you're exporting or importing, down to the to Savannah and Brunswick and that area, and you know, it's definitely important to you.
Right.
Lee, you've started sharing the limo on the way into the studio,
yeah,
haven't you?
Don't just carpooling. I call it carpooling.
So this is going to be a fun show because we've got some folks that you brought with you, including Betsy Mercer, right?
Correct.
Well, I know.
No, Mercer. It wasn't right.
I knew I'd
screw it up. She's being
up.
Polite.
That was correct.
No. Miss Betsy Mercer, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And so you're with CDC, Federal Credit Union. Give us a little bit of a feel for what you guys do.
Well, we are a Federal Credit Union, as the name suggests, and we are primarily serving people, consumers, from a wide range of organizations, including the Centers for Disease Control here in Atlanta. But we also open our membership and provide eligibility to a wide geographic range, especially in the DeKalb County area.
Now, can you talk a little bit about like the difference between a credit union and a bank, like why a person should choose working with a credit union instead of a bank?
Sure, I'd love to. Credit unions and banks both offer pretty much the same services. You've got basic personal financial products in the line of checking, savings, car loans, mortgages for your home. On the business end, a lot of credit unions offer the checking and loan services, credit card merchant activities. But the primary difference between a bank and a credit union is that banks are generally owned by stockholders and governed by a paid board of directors. Credit unions are owned by the people who are members of the credit union. There is no public ownership, and we are governed by a board of directors that acts in a volunteer capacity. They are not paid directors. So that in turn comes to generally, not generally, but almost always, a much lower rate on consumer loans and higher dividends paid on deposits as opposed to shares of stock.
Now, what about customer service? You think you guys do a better job in that area?
Well, of course I do, especially at CDC Federal Credit Union. That's really a great question, and I think the right answer, the only answer, could be that because of our not-for-profit status, we are able to deliver more one-on-one personalized service to our membership. And our decisions aren't based in the profitability of a transaction, but much more mutually agreed upon benefit to the credit union and the consumer.
And now you serve businesses as well, or are you confined to individuals, or is there some regulation or legislation that makes that distinction?
Well, currently there is only one regulation affecting credit unions in the business lending world, and that is a somewhat arbitrary limit on the amount of capital a credit union can invest in business loans. Right now, I'm pretty actively working with legislation to have that cap raised.
Uh-huh.
But in fact, credit unions have been lending to the business community since their inception in the United States in 1934. So this is a period in time where, with a lot of bank failures, a lot of restrictions on bank lending, the small business community has really reached out to credit unions. As a means of getting the capital they need to continue on, and a lot of entrepreneurs to begin a new business.
Now, I've seen in the news that a lot of banks are having problems. I'm not seeing in the news that a lot of credit unions are having problems.
Credit unions have really...
They've weathered the storm?
Well, we've weathered the storm because we didn't participate in the pre-storm activities. Because, as an industry, we like to say that we are a part of the solution because we were not a part of the cause. And since we're not profit motivated, getting into subprime lending and higher risk, higher reward activities was never a part of a credit union's business model.
Now, you're involved with the Chamber's capacity building series, is that right?
I am. I am the co-chair of the Small Business Committee for the DeKalb Chamber of Commerce, and we're the committee that designed and developed the capacity building series for all small businesses.
So now, why did you do that?
Well, we went out and we really listened to the small business community and heard their need and want for information and education, but at an affordable price.
Right.
So
they were you were dealing with small business people that were kind of asking for this information and they didn't know where to get it?
Well, they knew where to get it, but the Harvard School of Business is seldom available to small business.
Right.
And a lot of the higher level, higher education sources are very expensive. So we were able to consolidate the specific issues they wanted to hear about and reach out to professionals within each area and put together a very affordable education program.
And this is a program where there's sessions that happen throughout the year, a couple times a month, and they pay a fee. How does it work?
That is correct. It is a year-long program set up into four quarters, which is kind of the old college school schedule.
Right.
We could say semesters, but there's more than three. The classes are offered twice a month in half-day sessions. They include homework, and they cover a wide range of topics.
So what are some of the topics that you guys covered?
Well, we start the series with, I think, what begins a small business, and that's the business planning, strategic planning cycle. And small businesses come, and they are able to learn how to effectively build and design a business plan for their company, working with professionals dedicated to that activity. We also offer marketing. I think we all know that the best products and services have to be sold for a company to really survive, and the marketing series allows the small business owner to really learn how to convey that value to the most likely borrower in the most likely market at the most affordable rate. We move in from there to a capital building series that teaches small business about building capital in their company, borrowing money, how to sustain their growth, and survive financially in good times and bad times.
Because even if you have a great product and you're marketing it well, if you run out of money...
The best product sitting on the shelf is called inventory.
I think it's fantastic that you guys are offering this and collaborating, obviously, with the chambers and other organizations to help pull this thing off. Because as small business people, and the only reason we're a small business because we haven't figured out how to be a big business. We're not committed to being a small business.
If you go to the strategic planning, you will learn how to be a big business.
But all these things you're talking about, these are skill sets that I didn't come out of college with.
Right.
Did you?
No, I didn't. And that's great. Was it difficult to find the experts to teach you?
Oh, no, not at all. The greatest thing about experts is that they are always so willing to share their expertise.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, our last module, which addresses the people side of a business, I know often the most challenging piece of anyone's business, is being presented by two gentlemen in the Atlanta area who have very extensive knowledge of human resources. We call that one the Human Capital Series. And all of our presenters are actually doing this for us on a pro bono basis. So that has allowed us to...
For those of you who don't know Latin, that means free.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that, yeah, free is the right price, too. So the series is very, very affordable at less than $500 for the entire year. I think the...
$500 for this entire curriculum?
For the entire curriculum.
Wow.
And the attendees thus far have been raving in their reviews, which I think signals to us that it's a program well worth keeping.
And if I could add, I think the other thing that's also very good about the program is that while you can take it, the whole module and go to each one of the sessions, you can also take it a la carte.
And right, you so can like jump in and jump out where you have the need, right?
Correct. And so let's say, you know, for some, maybe your issues are really solely related on the finance side. And so you can just jump in then, or maybe it's on the human capital, or better yet, maybe you want to send someone from your team that works in that particular arena to the one that's applicable to them,
right?
While you then go to the one that's more applicable to you.
So you buy it as a business, and then you can send employees to it, or each employee has to pay individually?
No, you can do it as a business, and if you decide to pay for it as a business, and particularly if you buy the whole module, then you're able to send, you know, one person
to each thing,
to each one,
wow.
Or and that one person could be yourself or, again, someone that works in the business.
Well, and you have these instructors who are obviously seasoned experts, but just think of the value of hanging out with other people struggling through some of the same things you are, and they may be at a different point in the process. That's got to be incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the value in general of just the chamber all in all, whether it's capacity building or whether it's governmental affairs or if it's just strictly networking, just the fact of being around what you hope to be like-minded individuals who are really serious about growing their business, growing their network. I think that's part of the value.
Is this the first year of this?
Yes, it is.
So has it exceeded expectations?
I think the curriculum has far exceeded expectations. Mm-hmm. The folks that have attended the first two full modules, we're currently in the third module, have already gone back out into the public and talked with, as Leonardo said, their friends in business. And we're hopeful that this is the first of many years of the program.
So you do it again, like in a similar manner, though? You'll hit those same high points? Or will you come up with different sessions of different topics?
I think we probably will go back into the community and listen some more, to keep maybe this basic out there, but add on for the alumni.
Right, like an advanced...
Right, sort of your master's degree in small business capacity building.
Plus, I think the other part of it is when you start looking at some of the issues that you end up facing in running a business, it becomes so difficult to just drill down into four areas. I mean, certainly, sure. I think, you know, even one of our reasons with having, you know, Darshan here, who you'll hear from a little bit later, is the fact of some of the legal questions that come up in running your business. And so there may even be some opportunities there, but certainly I think we're going to go back and hopefully, like I think any smart business would do, and listen to the customer and find out, should we stay here, should we add something else, etc.
Let's take Darshan out of the soundproof booth, but I want y'all to act like she's all we've been talking about. Welcome to the show, Darshan.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
We are delighted to have you. So tell us a little bit about you. Are an attorney, yes?
I am an attorney.
Tell us about your practice and what you do.
Sure. I'm the owner and founder of Kendrick Law Practice. It's a law firm that's based in Lithonia, Georgia. And we actually only practice business law. So we're very, very specialized. I have a master's in business administration that I got last year because I'm just that committed to servicing business owners. But we are different than sort of the other online legal services you might find, Prepay Legal and LegalZoom, because we're very involved in our clients' business. We get to know your industry, your specific business needs. We're highly customized and personalized. So we can offer anything from incorporation. We do document drafting and reviewing. We do business plans. We do anything that is in writing. We can review or draft. And we also do negotiations of leases and business contracts. So we really do focus on helping smaller businesses because we understand the needs that business owners have, because we're a small business, and my parents, I was born and raised in Georgia, and both of my parents are business owners. So that is the reason that I am an attorney, and particularly a business attorney.
She went back and got her MBA. You believe that?
Wow.
You should do that for us. Yeah. We talk to business people,
it's
too.
Fun. It's fun. It's
fun, really, just on the side. Now, so you went to law school, and you finished, and you were out practicing, and you said, hey, I'm going to go back and get my MBA.
Right. Well, I graduated from the University of Georgia, and they actually had a dual program, so I could have stayed one more year, so 4 years in Athens. And I decided after going through my first month of law school that I was going to get out of Athens as soon as possible. So I've always wanted to get a master's in business administration, but I did come out and work for a small boutique law firm doing the same type of law, and decided to go back in January of 2010.
And so you just knocked it out. A year and a half
A year and a half, and I was done. But I got it from Kennesaw State, and it was a great program because it was online, so I was able, it wasn't any easier, let me tell you. It actually was harder, I believe. But I was able to get into that master's program.
Is that the executive MBA program?
Yes, but it's just an online version of it. But it was interesting because business people and lawyers think very differently.
Really?
So it's and the way that things are taught are very, very differently. So it's just interesting because I get to combine both of those things and build a really strong practice and be very good at giving business and legal advice to my clients.
Now, do you see any kind of common threads that business people, like mistakes that they make?
I think they generally get attorneys involved in the whole process too late. One of the things with the tagline of my business is to keep businesses in business and out of court. We like to do preventive measures. As someone once told me, my practice is more of a vitamin than an aspirin. So you got to involve us early and don't wait until you get the headache.
Right.
Because business people just in general tend to think about profitability and the bottom line, whereas lawyers, I guess they scare us straight. They teach us to think about what if this happens.
Right.
So we have a different mindset.
Right.
Of,
so you're
of
like
thinking
about like worst case scenarios or bad things that could happen.
Right. We're negative people.
right.
But it helps us be very good at what it is that we do because we're always thinking.
Because
a
business person is thinking like in best case scenarios constantly. You know, you're
always
thinking,
trying to envision the next thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But you need someone like this on your team.
To watch your back.
I bet a lot of the mistakes are errors of omission, too. Like, we don't need a contract for that. Yeah. Or let's wing this for a while.
Right. Well, you see that with a lot of small businesses, too, because a lot of them are so anxious to get the business because you're excited. You have this vision. And, you know, that first client comes through the door and you don't care what you have to do to get them. Get the check in. And, you know, I want to say in the majority of the cases, if you're dealing with people that you know, nothing's going to happen. But all it takes is that one time, and it can ruin your business. It could slow you down. You could be paying on it for years and years to come. So I just caution people to think like a business owner, you know. And part of that includes making sure that you have the required documentation that you need to make sure that you stay in business and out of court.
Now, somebody told me, and you're an expert in this, so you can probably help, is even if you contract with like a contractor to build your website, that they kind of own that content. You have to get some sort of a form or have them sign something.
Right, right. And this is an issue that came up with an organization that I sit on the board of, but people who do websites and create content, obviously is intellectual property. It's their original thought. And so if you want to be able to use their original thought, obviously they're going to have to sign over their original thoughts.
But just
over
paying
to
them doesn't mean that they've signed it over to you, though, right?
No, not at all. And, you know, and it's simple enough to draft up a one or two page form that just says, you know, anything that you created, we are able to use and distribute and things and things like that. But you want to make sure that you get that done because by default, if it's their original thought, they own it.
Right.
So are you wanting the rights to all the questions I'm asking? I see those wheels turning. Because I was thinking more about just getting key man insurance in case your CEO doesn't show up after a long Friday night or something. We have different issues. We both think we need a lawyer. We just have different concerns. We have a different lens that we're seeing it through.
Now, do you do that? Like, do you help with those kind of contracts? Because, like, I would think that it's a good plan to meet with an attorney just periodically to kind of tell you, this is what we're doing. Do you see any needs or maybe you should tighten up my contracts?
Right.
That should be like a regular checkup almost.
Right. And that's one of the things that I encourage business owners to do is, even if you think you can't afford an attorney right now, just get one that you know on your team. Like, my firm offers 30-minute business consultations that you could pay for, and what we do is just go over sort of your whole business from a business uh-huh. and a legal perspective. And so if we're not a good fit, at least you haven't paid a lot of money
for a long period of time. Right. This is just kind of an overview of what's
right,
going on.
To see what it is that I can do for you. If we're a good match, then great. Next time you need an attorney, then give me a call. Or even if you just have one or two questions, you can always give me a call, but don't get us in a situation where, you know, it's 2 days before you're about to be evicted from your right. commercial lease and think that I'm going to work miracles because right. I'm just a lawyer. I'm not a magician.
Now, how do you get new clients? Is it primarily referrals? I would think that there are a great many lawyers and some others of whom also say we serve business people, right? It must be a little bit of a challenge, the marketing side of your world, or is there legislation that says you can't do that, or is it just not cool?
Well, I mean, lawyers in general are governed by a whole different set of marketing rules than most professions. We're not allowed to generally market to people unless we have disclaimers. So it's not like I can get a list of business owners and just send them information.
You're not
going to
call me during dinner tonight.
Well, the professional rules provide that there's three circumstances where we can tell somebody, you know, we're an attorney and solicit their services. One of them is that if we actually know them. So since I know you all, I could tell you I'm an attorney and I could solicit your business. But, you know, somebody just randomly on the street, I couldn't pull over and say, hey, I'm an attorney and, you know.
You don't have that magnet on your door?
No, I don't have that. But one of the things that makes it easy for my firm to market is there's not many attorneys that I can think of that all they do is practice business law. This is all we do. We sleep it, we eat it. So you're not going to get us doing a will on the side or probate. We don't have to know different areas of law. This is all that we do day in and day out, and so it makes us very good at what it is that we do. So if somebody does want to use an attorney that's either general practice or, you know, does this on the side, I think they'll notice the difference in the commitment and the type of service that they'll get, because this is essentially all that we do.
Now, how are you involved with the DeKalb Chamber?
I got involved with the DeKalb Chamber when I opened up my law firm in 2010, the same time that I started my master's program, by the way. And so I was born and raised in DeKalb County, and I've known about the chamber for a very long time and knew that I always was going to be a business attorney, and I needed to join a chamber. And so I have worked with Leonardo on many legislative issues, and additionally, I know that Leonardo has a lot of programs and things that help business owners right. with networking and gaining clients and things like that. So I have been involved with the chamber for as much as I can with my busy schedule.
Now, so if they ask you to get involved in this capacity building thing for next year, talk about legal issues, I'm doing a little recruiting for
him. I see you are. No, that's totally fine.
You're welcome, Leonardo.
It's a great marketing opportunity.
I'm sure. I do any number of speaking right. engagements and things. And like she said before, if you're an expert and you know what you're talking about, you don't mind sharing that information, especially because I can always relate it back to my parents never having access to all these great services, especially having access to a business attorney that cared about them. Right. That is sort of my way of giving back for all the headache that my parents went through.
Another benefit of the DeKalb Chamber, not to be dismissed, within walking distance in virtually any direction of several really good and interesting restaurants.
That's right. Oh, there's no shortage of good food around here.
That's very true.
That's always one of the things that's mentioned about downtown Decatur, and it, excuse me, is just the fact that it is a walkable community, for one.
Yeah.
And then you have just a number of different restaurants, boutiques, and other shops that you can patronize.
That was probably a coincidence that you guys decided to set up there right in the middle of that.
Well, I think that that certainly helps. And the fact that, you know, we have a number of partners that we refer to them as partners that are nearby, between the county's Office of Economic Development, also between the Planning Department and the Development Authority of DeKalb County. Also, our, you know, we're in the county seat as well. And so between the county and commissioners, City of Decatur and the like, it's just really a good place for us.
Now, for any business people out there, what are some of the compelling reasons? We talked a little bit about this whole educational series, but what are some of the other benefits of being a member of the chamber?
Generally, I always, excuse me, when I talk about the chamber, I tend to put it in four distinct areas. It's a little, I guess, acronym I've coined, AABC. And first thing I always talk about, one, is access to information. Mm-hmm. And I think certainly today we've talked about that access to information. And in this realm, it's more from a continuing ed professional development. But access could be simply, I received something from business licensing or economic development or rather the planning department, and I'm not quite sure where to go. Or I'm having issues getting a permit. Who can I talk to? Helping you connect the dots. And so that's the access piece. The second is advocacy. In this realm, we've been working closely, as we talked about earlier, on the transportation referendum, but also even within the confines of our county, being that advocate for the business person. While, you know, a Darshan or Betsy is running their business, they can take solace in the fact that I may be at the Board of Commissioners meeting, or I may be at a different department meeting or what have you, finding about things that are going on that may affect their livelihood, and also being able to say, this is how it may affect business. So that's the advocacy piece. The third would be business development opportunities, and that really boils down to networking. And then lastly, cost-saving discounts. We have a host of different relationships with different companies that provide products and services that businesses are going to be purchasing anyway. And so if you can save money on those items through your affiliation with the chamber, then it only makes sense. So case in point, whether it's workers' comp insurance, health insurance, also on another is even on something like email communications through Constant Contact. And those are just a few, just to name a few.
So, Betsy, I wonder, do you, when you're working with the business people that come to you, your clients, or even internally with your employees, I would think that you would probably very loud and proud, within limits, make it known, look, we're part of the chamber, we work with them, there's all kinds of ways to access them. That's something I would think you'd probably promote internally and with your clients as well, huh?
Oh, we do. And, you know, I know we're talking business today, but the truth of the matter is so many of my best friendships have been formed through events hosted by the chamber or my participation in different committees. But we sing the praise of the chamber, and we go out even to other businesses, business owners in our community, and bring about the chamber for them, because I think most small businesses just don't know how very valuable a chamber membership is in gaining access to information. That's just critical, and there's no good reason for a small business owner not to have full knowledge of their business and industry.
You go ahead and get that.
That would be my phone.
Tell your boyfriend that we will be done soon. And
I especially like that music, so I always
I do too.
I always hate to answer the phone until the song is finished playing, you know. My apologies. I thought I had turned that off already.
Now,
but we do. We do send people to the chamber. We advocate membership in the chamber. Darshan is a chamber member, and so clients talking to me who have not yet done the paperwork for incorporating their business would likely be referred to another chamber member.
Well, you get
member.
To know and trust these people,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah,
and you know, when you're, my role is primarily in referring, so you always want to know that you're making a referral of value to someone. So that's the other benefit, and why we do kind of go loud on our
I would. Yeah, makes perfect sense to me.
Now, before we end this, I'd like to talk a little bit about raising capital. I know that's kind of an important part of what you do, and it's an important part for a lot of the business owners. All they're hearing is that it's impossible to get loans. It's impossible or difficult, not impossible. It's a challenge. Now,
well, I think it's probably decidedly more difficult than it was a few years ago. And this economy, again, a lot of financial institutions, if they've already got just a big bulk of loans concentrated in one type of business, they might be leery of lending into that same business. Some have capital troubles and have had to limit their lending. And so for small business, it has become more difficult. And I think most important to that process is for the small business owner to understand there's no one like them to sell their business. And so coming into a lender's office, the small business needs to have just the highest degree of confidence.
Right.
And so as I'm making a loan decision, certainly the financial performance of a company matters and is critical to that process.
Right.
But I know lending, I might not know business law. And so the small business owner that can sit down with a loan officer and explain their business really helps the loan officer make the right decision in understanding how that transaction is going to lead to the success of the business. How much the owner needs to borrow, how long it's going to take them to repay it, and certainly that they have every belief that the transaction is going to be a success. You know, you don't borrow money for something that's going to fail. And if you do, please don't tell the lender at the front end.
We're just taking a shot here.
Right.
So,
But
do loan officers really have some discretion within limits? Because I got to tell you, sometimes the perception is, you know, it's all a spreadsheet. There's no point in building a relationship with this person. Do they have some discretion within some limits?
I can't speak for all financial institutions. Certainly for mine, the loan officer has total discretion in that transaction within the laws and the regulations that we work within.
I'm not suggesting they would loan me money, but I'm saying somebody like Lee with a decent credit score.
We talked about that before the show started. I think that you would find in most instances loan officers do have the ability to make the decision, and if not make the decision themselves, the person that they're presenting that request to, if the business owner and the loan officer have been able to articulate the details of the transaction, then even if they've got to go up the ladder for an approval, then they've got the right ingredients to bake the right cake.
It makes sense to me. It kind of touches on what you described earlier, Darshan, is maybe I should start to build a solid relationship with my lender way before I need the money, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's
you should always have that relationship.
Sure. And I, I've been in banking for 37 years, and I have a lot of friendships that used to be clients. I was with a very large bank in the Atlanta area. And the beauty of that is that you've got to just always be in touch with whoever your banking relationship resides with, and you've got to always be honest. It always saddens me when I hear horrific stories about someone not working with a client to get them through a tough time, because tough times are bountiful, and it certainly does not behoove the banker to lose the money.
Right.
So, I think going around, getting in chambers, there are a lot of bankers in the chamber, but even other business organizations, and really going to someone you're comfortable with. A lot of folks say, what's the rate? And I always say, well, it's as good as it can be for me and as good as it can be for you, but what's the relationship? And I think the relationship in small businesses is critical with the attorney, the banker, the accountant. Those have got to be your friends, not your enemies.
And I just want to add, to that, and that's something I know that I've witnessed as well, is just the value that the small business person can have with their banker. and really to the point where it's the relationship you have with the individual and not even to the institution. Because one of the things that often that you will find, particularly with your more seasoned business owners, is that they may be banking with the same individual for, you know, maybe 10, 20 years, and that person has gone maybe for three or four different institutions, but that person knows their business in and out. And so when there is a time for a need, they know the individual, one, in the caliber of person they are. And so even when things get a little shaky and maybe on paper it does not look as good as it should look, but I have this relationship, this personal relationship with this individual that maybe now is an intangible that allows me to say, well, hey, I know things aren't as good as they would appear, and normally I wouldn't do this deal, but I know Joe.
Well, right. And that's there's so much truth to that, Leonardo, and there's, you know, as I said, I don't know how to run a trucking company, but if my client knows how to run a trucking company and the price of gas spikes up and that causes disruption, then I don't have to panic because I know my friend in the trucking business, and I know what they're capable of. So celebrating successes together is always a fun thing to do, but really going through tough times is equally as important.
Now, that was great advice, and I think, Leonardo, I really appreciate you bringing these two on because they were showing the importance of the trusted advisor for small business people or business people in general. And it's good to have in your pocket an attorney and a banker, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. Those are certainly two of the your more trusted allies. And certainly I think Betsy alluded to another, which is the accountant.
Right, the CPA.
The CPA, right. Bookkeeper, however you want to coin the phrase, but certainly someone that really can help you really keep the books straight. And that can also keep you out of trouble with the IRS and behind in terms of payroll taxes and everything else.
And also, they by having a good team, that would help you get capital when you need it. That would help you in lots of different areas, get you out of trouble before it happens, a lot of important things. So now let's wrap up with just some, if people want to learn more about this capacity building series, where can they go for more information?
They can go to the DeKalb Chamber's website, which is DeKalbChamber.org, or actually we have a capacity building website itself, which is DeKalbCapacityBuilding.com. And so if you were to Google that or what have you, there's a separate site alone.
Just for that. Now, let's go around the room, make sure everybody gets their contact information and gets all that stuff. You have something, Darshan?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on, you mentioned about raising capital, and one of the great things about what it is that I do is I get to learn about all the latest business trends, and I don't know if anybody has ever heard of the Federal Jobs Act that just passed, which was signed by President Obama in April of this year, but it totally opens up the span of people that can now raise capital in exchange for equity for business owners. And this is revolutionary because before you had to file with the Securities and Exchange Commission,
right,
and get an exemption. You had to qualify under an exemption, but it limited it to you had to be an accredited investor,
right,
which meant
you had to have a million dollars.
Right. And so now it opens it up so that you and I can invest in these small businesses in exchange for equity. Now, they haven't came up with all the procedures for how this is going to logistically work that won't be in place until the Securities and Exchange Commission does the regulations in January. But this is a great way for business owners to raise capital right now in exchange for equity through social media. They can do it through email. There's going to be a portal that you have to go through the SEC, but that's one of the ways to market it so that you can point people to your special portal and raise money in exchange for equity. I mean, it totally opens up who can invest and how much money that small business owners can raise.
Now, you've said you've done some research in this area. You know a little bit about it?
What about crowdfunding?
Yeah.
Yes, it's called crowdfunding, and I took several securities classes while in law school, and it's just the Securities and Exchange Commission is a federal agency that's set up to protect consumers. So there's all these regulations if people want to sell ownership of their business in exchange for, you know, getting money.
Right.
And before, it just was very tedious. It was very expensive for business owners to sell to family members or friends
right.
or to people because you had all these regulations. But the Federal Jobs Act makes it more lenient for business
it's
owners.
It's easier to happen and it's simpler to
right.
To make the
could
transaction.
You send a memo on this to my uncle?
I have an audio PowerPoint presentation on this. It's like 18 minutes long. If people go to my website, www.kendricklaw.net, or shoot me an email, dkendrick@kendricklaw.net, and I'll shoot you the PowerPoint presentation. But it's 18 minutes. It's audio, and it goes through the whole revolution of the Jobs Act and how you can take advantage
of
it.
Well, I mean, if every Peyton and every Connor would give $1,000, we would be in great shape.
We'd work on that maybe this weekend.
There you go.
No, this is great news. And I remember when we were at the VC Angel meeting, they were high-fiving about this thing, too.
Right, it had just come about.
Right. And I know there's some things to be worked out about it, but I'm tickled.
It's exciting
time. It's very
exciting. It is very exciting.
So now your website again?
My website is www.kendricklaw.net. People can give me a call, 678-739-8109, or shoot me an email, dkendrick@kendricklaw.net. But we do give free 15-minute phone consultations, so if anybody has a question, please give us a call. We love speaking to business owners, but don't engage us when it's too late, because one of the things that I do not like doing is litigation. Even though I was a litigator for 2 years and can do it, it will cost you. So
right.
I'm warning you now to call before
nobody wins in litigation completely, right?
Now, is there what's your ideal client profile? Like, how
the ideal client profile is somebody who has been in business over 3 years, and somebody who has revenues roughly $250,000 or more.
And above, right?
Because they that area is usually where the legal problems come up enough that it can bankrupt the business. And also, we can give you a lot more comprehensive advice at that level.
Right. Good stuff. Now, Betsy, how about you?
Well, my web address is cdcfcu.com. For the credit union, I can be reached by email at bmercier@cdcfcu.com.
And your phone, we know your phone works.
My phone works. if I don't answer, it's because I gave you an even better song than the song you all got to hear earlier. I really do apologize for that. I'm kind of a stickler about people leaving their phone on, believe it or not. But I would welcome any call, and certainly through my affiliation with the DeKalb Chamber of Commerce, happy to work with any small business owner on questions they might have.
Now, are you in the market for giving out loans to business people? Is that an area that's important for you guys to do more work in?
Well, we have been engaged in business lending for a long time at the credit union. We do offer somewhat limited, just basic financial services to small business only. We do not accept clients for our business services whose sales exceed $5 million in a year. And we'll go as low as the gentleman lawn mower company.
Right.
So we're there. We're there for what we call people, and pretty firm in our stance that small businesses are owned by people.
So, but is small business, is that an area that you target as an ideal customer, or you're up for anybody that's had some money?
No. It's not about the money. I told you that.
Relationships. They can have no money, but they're
nice. We are looking for the small business that presents a relationship. We are currently developing a broader business banking unit within the credit union in reaction to the community demand for more participation in that regard. So we look forward to probably having that more broadly available in the beginning of 2013.
Cool. And the website again is
cdcfcu.com.
cdcfcu.com.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thanks.
All right. Now, Leonardo, what about you? Where are your coordinates?
Oh, you can reach us always at 404-378-8000. That's the main line to the DeKalb Chamber, or online at dekalbchamber.org. And then for those that are into social media, use the hashtag DeKalb Chamber. And we're on Facebook as well.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of this. Great job, Stone, as always. This is Lee Cantor for Atlanta Business Radio. We will see you all next week. Thanks.
Thank you.